Morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Mem Dalet. We are starting today on the Mishnah Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Hayarochav mi Beis Haskila ke'eser Amos. He's now 10 Amos away from the Beis Haskila. As we already established in the beginning of the sixth parak, which we started yesterday, a person is about to be executed. He's subject to the Haskila penalty. So he is now almost literally at the footsteps of the Beis Haskila, at the ledge in which he's going to be thrown off. So the Mishnah now at 10 Amos away. So we are going to make the following request of him. So he's ten amos away from the base of Skila. Kaser amos from Memlo is Vadeh. So we say to him, now confess. Shekein derchol amumsim mizvadim. Anyone who's going to be executed is going to confess. Shekol amizvadi yishlochel kol amaba. And the confession is going to be part of the kapara. And if you confess, you're going to receive a portion in olam haba shekein matzil ma'achan. In fact, where do we find this? We find this by Achan. Achan, prior to him being executed. So he confessed, Shamarlo Yoshua benisim na kavod la Hashem lakei Yisrael v'tein lo todah. Yoshua pleads for Achan to confess. Vayan Achan es Yoshua v'yomar amna anochi chatas v'chazos v'chazos. And we find that Achan actually confessed right before he's executed. Uminay shekipar lo v'iduyav. And how do I know that his confession actually turned into a kapara? It served as an atonement. Shenemar v'yomar Yoshua machartan yakach Hashem v'yamazer. So Yoshua says to Achan, you dirtied us, but hayom hazeh, on this day, today you dirtied us, but not for the future. Meaning that you're going to receive a portion of olam haba. Now, if the convicted felon does not know how to make a vidui, so we just simply provide for him the wording. We say to him, my death should serve as a kapar for all my sins. Rabbi Yehuda Omer im haya yodeshu mezuman. Let's say that the convicted felon knows that this was framed. And he knows that he really is not guilty, he's really innocent. And for reasons which, for whatever happened, however it happened, and with the end of today's daf, where hopefully we'll get to an amazing incident. So he knows he was framed, so what should he say? So yeah, I'm going to be executed, and yeah, in this particular situation I was framed, but my death should serve as a kapar for everything but this. Meaning, because I didn't do this. Amr lo, they say to Rav Yehuda, Imkin, you call Adam Omer, Kin Kedil Anakos Atzman. So the Chacham said, Rav Yehuda will never suggest for anybody to say that. Because anybody who's going to be executed is just going to make this statement, that my death should serve as a kapar for everything but this, because I didn't do it. And so they're just trying to clear their name. And the Chachamim said, Rav Yehuda, we will never encourage anyone to make this kind of claim. Okay. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara now starts with a Gemara, with a Braisa. Huh?
Why did he get the
Besan? Who, Achan?
Yeah.
We're going to discuss that in great detail. Okay. We're starting the Gemara now. We're on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We're halfway down the Amud, right after the Mishnah. And for the remainder of today, almost primarily, the Gemara is going to be dealing with Achan. So let's just do a little quick review of Navi, so that we can appreciate what happened. Yehoshua takes Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael after Moshe dies in the Midbar, and they cross the Yarden, and the first city that they go and conquer is Yericho. Perhaps the most popular conquest, the first conquest and the most popular. So they circled Yericho 7 days. Each day they're blowing shofar. And on the seventh day, the walls come down and they attack Yericho. They defeat Yericho. And all's well that ends well. However, at the end of the battle, so there was a lot of spoils of war. And Yoshua says to the Jewish people, as a dedication to Hashem and to thank Hashem, so we're not going to touch the spoils of war. And Yoshua places a chayram, a ban, against anyone who handles and takes for themselves spoils of war. Achan could not resist. Achan had an opportunity to take the spoils of war, despite the fact that there was a ban. And as we're going to see later on this morning, if somebody violates the ban, it is a capital offense to violate the ban against the spoils of war, subject to strafe, subject to being burnt. Although Achan himself was not burnt, and the Gemara is going to deal with that later on as well. And so Achan helps himself to the spoils of war, and he doesn't tell anybody. Yehoshua, however, realizes that somebody took from the spoils of war. How did Yehoshua know that? Only because of the next battle. The next battle that they fight after Yericho is a city called Ai in Yud. And what happens in the battle of Ai is that 36 soldiers died. Now, in Yericho, 0 soldiers died. And so Yehoshua realizes that if 36 soldiers died, it's because there must be some sort of chait that is amongst the Jewish people. And so Yehoshua realizes that Somebody must have went against the Cherem back in Yericho. He asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I mean, we're going to see this all together, but just giving you a background. He asks the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not saying. I'm not saying who. You'll take a lottery. The lottery came up on Achan's name. At first, Achan was a little belligerent, but then after a little more coercion, the Gemara is going to describe it later as even bribery. So finally, he makes an admission. Yes, it was me. And Achan is put to death. He's put to death through Skila. The Gemara is going to discuss that later on. Should have been Srefa, but for reasons which we're going to detail later on, he got Skila.
Why is it a capital crime?
It's a fair question. It's like stealing. I guess the cherem is even more. The question's good. Other than the fact that the Navi says so, which is a great answer, but it doesn't. In other words, what of air of the Torah does it conform to? Okay. Yeah. In other words, right. That's good. Alex is right. In other words, it's a morid b'machus. You're going against the king. Okay. All right. Anyway, with all that stated, that's all the background. And so let's see all these Gemaras inside. The Gemara is going to... Now, it'd be best if we went through the Pesukim beforehand. Most of the Pesukim we're going to be quoting from today is from the 7th parak of Yehoshua. Okay, so I should have assigned that for homework. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. Na'ina l'lashon bakasha. So when Yehoshua says to Achan, please confess, he says, nah. Na'az bakasha. B'shash ha'makash baruch l'Yeshua chata Yisrael. So Hashem says to Yehoshua, you know, the Jewish people sin. Again, this is post the battle of Ai. Amale fana Rebbeinu Shel Olam michata. So Yeshua says, okay, just tell me who. Amale v'chi delator ani lecha pelgar elo. So Hashem says, I'm not a tattletale. I don't snitch. So you take a lottery. Halach the ipel gar elo v'naf al gara al achan. So the lottery came out on Achan. Amale Yeshua begar el ata ba Eli. So Achan says to Yeshua, a lottery? Really? Ata v'lazar kon shnei gedolei ador. Ata mimani mapel alechem gar al achas mikem hu nofel. Look, let's say I put into the lottery you and Elazar HaKohen. And so what's going to happen? The lottery is going to pick one of you two. So in other words, somebody's going to be chosen through the lottery. So it happened to have been me. But come on, it's a lottery. So Yeshua says to Achan, please do not speak ill about the lottery. You know the land of Israel is going to be divided through a lottery. A lottery is significant. So now, Yehoshua says to Achim, look, I know it's you. The lottery is significant. It's not coincidence. So just make an admission. So Ravina says he actually bribed Achan to give a confession. Yehoshua says to Achan, I'm just asking for an admission. Give me an admission and you will be free. So miyad v'yanachan es Yeshua v'yoma amana amna anochi chatas l'Hashem l'kei Yisrael v'chazos v'chazos asisi, and then he makes an admission. And yes, I know you can challenge, I know you can question the method of Yehoshua in terms of getting the admission. Because Yehoshua seems to make an offer which is not perfectly accurate. And telling him that if you make an admission that you're going to go free. I realize that the method here is a little rough. He pater could be interpreted to mean just simply that you'll be free from the sin when you go through the process. Okay, I know we could all say that, but okay. Amar Avaski, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Malamit Shamal Achan B'Shosha Charamim. This is not the first time Achan has offended a Cherem. This is now, according to one opinion, the third time. Shnayim Bimei Moshe V'Echa Bimei Yehoshua. Twice during the times of Moshe and once during the times of Yehoshua. Which battles are we talking about? So you'll see Rashi. I'm not going to go through it right now. Rashi actually counts up the battles that Moshe fought out in the desert. And Moshe also placed a cherem against the Jewish people. And Achan violated them twice during the times of Moshe, once during Yehoshua. Shenemar kazos v'kazos asisi. In fact, that we actually see in the admission itself. The admission says, kazos v'kazos asisi. I did this and I did it again, in addition to this time. Rav Yochanan, Rav Mishim, Rav Elazar, Rav Mishim, and Chamisha. There were actually, he's a five-time offender. Arba bimei Moshe, there were four during Moshe. And again, take a look at Rashi. Rashi counts it up during the times of Moshe, where there were four battles. Although even Rashi himself admits it's hard to find four in the Torah. But still, The point is that he was a repeat offender. Now he's looking at the same pasuk, but you have not the words kazos versus kazos, you have the vichazos and vichazos. And that's, the vav is also darshan, so that's two plus another two, plus the time of Yoshua, five-time offender. Hashta, my ve'ad hashta, my time alo, i'anesh. So the obvious question, so why is he now getting punished now for the first time? Because even though it was nistaros, it was a hidden crime. He didn't tell anybody that he took the spoils, but because it was a hidden crime, we, before entering into Eretz Yisrael, are not responsible for one another. And upon entering Eretz Yisrael, we now take full responsibility for one another. It's a concept which we refer to elsewhere in the Gemara as Kol Yisrael Raven Zebezeh. We become guarantors for one another, and we become responsible for one another. And according to one opinion which the Gemara now is citing, we're even responsible for sins that are not known, which is really, if you think about it, an awesome responsibility. Meaning that not only am I responsible to protest things that I see, but I also now begin to have to share responsibility for things I don't even know about. Admittedly, that becomes an awesome responsibility. And Kitanayim, the Gemara points out that this is a machlokas tanaim, and the Gemara now cites an opinion that we become responsible even for the nistaros, even for things that are not public sins. Kitanayim nistaros l'shem lakin v'negos lanu levanenu ad olam. Now the Gemara quotes the pasuk from the end of the Chumash that we become responsible for it says nistaros l'Hashem. Hidden sins, that's in Hashem's jurisdiction. And the revealed ones are in our jurisdiction. Now, if you look carefully at the psukim, you're going to find that there are dots over the words. If you look in the Torah, you're going to find, when I say in the Torah, I mean actually in a Sefer Torah itself. Meaning we don't normally have nekudos in the Torah. There are no vowelizations in the Torah, but occasionally you're going to find dots over words. Now, dots over words is like our equivalent of basically putting something in parentheses. Meaning when you're putting something in parentheses, it's kind of like it's there, but maybe doesn't belong there. Dots over a word in the Torah, it's a similar idea. It like minimizes the words. So over the words, alanu levanenu, and the ayin and ad, you're going to find dots. And what is it? What's the Torah trying to communicate to us? So the sheet of Rav Yehuda goes like this. Hidden sins are in God's jurisdictions, but not always. And the dots over the words actually is there to communicate to us that yes, they're in Hashem's jurisdictions, but not for long. Once we cross the Yarden, we now become responsible even for the hidden, even for nistaros, even for hidden sins. And this is the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Now Rashi here is long. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now, but Rashi goes on to describe how really the dot should be over Hashem's name. Because we're minimizing Hashem, because basically the idea, according to Rav Yehuda, is that Hashem will take the responsibility of the hidden miracle, of the hidden sins, but only up to a point. So really the dots belong over Hashem's name, but it's not appropriate to put dots over Hashem's name, so therefore the dots are moved over to other words. Anyway, you see Rashi inside, Rashi goes into great detail over here. But you see that according to Rav Yehuda, the idea here is that after we cross the Yarden, we become responsible even for nistaros. And that's why we were all punished for the sin of Achan. So, and Rav Nechemi disagrees with Rav Yehuda. No, it's not true. Nistaros always remains in Hashem's jurisdiction. No, there is a change once we cross the Yarden. But the change is not regarding the nistaros. The nistaros always remain in Hashem's jurisdiction. What changes is the niglos, meaning revealed sins. So revealed sins that you and I know about. So for that, I have to, before we cross the Yarden, I'm not responsible for anyone, for the actions of anybody else. But after we cross the Yarden, I and all of us become responsible for one another, but only for Niglos, only for the revealed sins, not for Nistaros, not for hidden sins. And according to Reb Nechemiah now, the Gemara asks the question, well, if Achan did this in private, so then why are we all sinned? Why are we all held accountable? Ella, top now of Memdalit Amud Aleph. My Tame I Anosh. So why were we all punished for the actions of Achan? If you subscribe to the viewpoint of Rebbe Nechemia, Gemara answers, Mishum Dahaviyade Be Ishtov Anav. Because it was not hidden. His wife knew about it. His children knew about it. And so that was not hidden. And the assumption is, we say this by the halachas of Lashon Hara, once three people know about it, we assume everybody knows about it. Here too, once the family knows about it, we're going to have to assume that everybody knows about it. And so it was not Nistaros, it was Niglos, and that's why we were all punished.
I mean, basically, you got a death sentence without any warning, without any witnesses, just by a corpse. How could that be?
Well, this is right, but this is a meta halacha. It's beyond the letter of the law. Meaning, this is a cheirim. It's a violation of a cheirim, which we discussed. Alex was asking me earlier, like what Torah prohibition are we even talking about over here? So maybe we suggested earlier, maybe Mori b'machus, maybe it's a rebellion against the king. Okay, yeah, but you're right. It's not. It doesn't conform to the normal laws of regular jurisprudence. Okay, we are on the very top of Memdal Med Aleph, two lines down. Chata Yisrael, the Jewish people sin. I'm Rabbi Abba Bar Zav Dafa Pisha Chata Yisrael, who the Gemara actually takes this pasuk and puts a positive spin on the pasuk, meaning that we are a Jew and we always be a Jew, and even after we sin, we're still going to be Jewish. I'm Rabbi Abba Hainu Dami Inshi Asa Dekai Benichilfe Asa Shmei Vasa Karele. If you take a hadas and you put it amongst the ravos. Now the ravos here in this analogy is considered the sinner. I know, right? Sukkot is coming up. And so the Dalaminim, so we have a lot of, you'll hear this in the drushas, right? That each of the minim refer to a Jew, a type of Jew. But anyway, our Gemara over here says that the Hadas smells wonderful. The Aravos are not so good. If you take a Hadas and you put it amongst the Ravos, it still smells good. That's the mashal. The nimshal is that when you're a Jew, it doesn't matter that you surround yourself with Ravos, with sins, it doesn't matter. You're still always going to be a Jew. The gam avrus b'siyah shir tzivisi osam gam lachum menachem, gam ganvu, gam kinchshu, gam samu b'kleihem. Now, the psukim in Yoshua in the Navi talk about how Achan did this and this and this and this with the gam. The gam repeated five times. Am Rabbi Lai, Mishim Rabbi Yehuda, bar misparta malamisha avar Achan achamisha chumshe Torah, violator of the five chumashim of the Torah. Shenemer chamisha gam, it says gam five times. Va'amar Rabbi Lai, Mishim Rabbi Yehuda, bar misparta achan moshech bar lasohaya. The Gemara is not going to stop there. The Gemara says that he tried to take the arla of his bris milah and put it back over. Now the Gemara says, now the truth of the matter is, isn't that the simple pshat in the Pesukim? Gemara says, not necessarily. I might have thought that it's a mitzvah shebegufo, a mitzvah that actually is on your body, and Achan didn't go that over the deep end. The Gemara says, no, he did. Kamash malan. V'chiyasa nevala b'Yisrael, and he did a nevala amongst the Jewish people again. Yoshua perek zayin. Am Rabbi Abba Barzav Damlam Shabal Achan Aram Arasa. Achan had relations with a betrothed Na'ara. Now, that is adultery, but adultery in the worst way imaginable. Because regular adultery is subject to the death penalty of chenek, strangulation. Adultery with Na'ara Marasa is a skila penalty. So, k'siv hacha v'chiasa nevala v'ksiv hasa n'kiasa nevala b'yisrael pshita. Now, the Gemara says, we're not reading into the psukim. It actually says the word nevala. And Nevala in the Torah is described with Na'ara Marasa. Ma'u detemekula ha'lo pakar nafshei kamash malan. And the Gemara says, yeah, but the Havamina would have been, he didn't go that far off the deep end. And the Gemara says, no, but that's exactly the point he did. Ravina amardina b'Na'ara Marasa debeskila. And now the Gemara goes on to explain that he is subject to the Na'ara Marasa penalty with skila. Meaning, according to Ravina, he didn't have relations with Na'ara Marasa, but the reason why the Gemara uses this language by Achan is to tell us that he was subject to that kind of penalty. Now, obviously, the question begs itself. Well, if he didn't have relations with the Na'ara Marasa, so why is he getting that kind of penalty? The Gemara does not explain. To be fair, Rashi doesn't explain as well. Okay, that needs an answer. I happen not to have an answer. Okay, but I don't have all the answers. I have very few of them, in fact. But it needs an explanation why he got the skila penalty if, in fact, he did not have relations with the Na'ara Marasa. Now, the Gemara doesn't quote any more of the Pasuk, but if you read on in the Pasuk, it basically sounds like they all were eliminated, meaning his entire family was eliminated as well. That's a simple reading of the Pasuk. And the Gemara now is going to ask the question. They didn't do anything. Meaning, he's the one who took the cherim. The family didn't take the cherim. They should not be subject to the death penalty. The Gemara says, well, if you read the pasuk, it says the entire Jewish people together with Achan. They did not receive the death penalty. So the Gemara says it was just there for the purposes of sending a message, meaning that the family was not executed. Achan was the only one who was executed. It was just that the message was being sent to the family members and to all the Jewish people, don't do this again. And then there was a sreifa, and then there was a skila. Now, Achan himself was niskal. The Torah says that clearly. And then as far as everything else, meaning all the spoils that he took, it got burnt, it got stoned. Well, which one which? So, Bitarte, the Gemara asks the question very succinctly. Both? The Gemara answers. Am Ravina, Aroi, Lesreifa, Lesreifa, Aroi, Leskila, Leskila. Like things, the spoils of war that he took, meaning the gold, the silver, the clothing, right? All the durable goods, so they were burnt. And the animals that he took, well, if an animal is subject to skila under certain circumstances, in this case, that's one of those circumstances. Okay. Va'era b'shalal aderes. We're back to the psukim in Yoshua Perek Zion. Achan explains what he took. He took a cloak, a coat, that was worth 200 silver coins. It was extraordinarily expensive. Rav Amar Yitzhila Demilso, Shmuel Amar Starvala Detzrifa. Exactly what the coat was made of. So the Gemara brings into opinions. Rav says it was made of the wool of a sheep that was perfectly pristine. From the moment that the sheep was born, it was held in some sort of pen where it never rolled in the dirt. According to Shmuel, it actually had some sort of metal, some sort of aluminum that was melted into the wool. Whatever, however you want to describe it, it was fantastic in its value. Va'itzakum lifnei Hashem, and what Yahushua did is he took the spoils of war and he threw it down against Hashem. Amar Rav Nachman bava chavtam lifnei Hamakom. So the Gemara over here gives us powerful imagery. Yahushua taking the spoils of war that Achan took, threw it down. And Amar lefanu Ribon Shalom, Eilei L'Tearek Ruba Shel Sanhedrin, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, 36 people died. That qualifies as the majority of the Sanhedrin. Because of this, 36 people have to die. Yechsev Vayikum Mahem Anshei Ai K'Shloshim V'Shishim Ish. V'Tanya. The Gemara here quotes a Braisa. Shloshim V'Shishim Mamash Div Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that literally 36 people died in the Battle of Ai. Amar Lo Reb Nechemiah V'Chik Shloshim V'Shisha Ayu V'Alo Lo Nemar Ela Kishloshim V'Shisha Ish. Read the pasuk carefully. It says Kishloshim. Like 36 people died. It was only one person who died, but he was equivalent to the majority of a Sanhedrin. It was Ya'ir ben Menashe. The pasuk in Mishlei. I know we're hearing a lot of Mishlei lately in the Daf. It says that the poor person speaks quietly with supplication, and the wealthy person, so he speaks with arrogance. So Tachanun Yidaber Rash and Moshe. V'ashir Ya'ane Azos and Yoshua. The former is a reference to Moshe, the latter is a reference to Yeshua. Moshe spoke with Tachanunim in front of Hashem, and Yeshua spoke with a little bit of brazenness. And the Gemara says, "My time ilema mishum dechliva itzakum lifnei Hashem." Now, where exactly do we see Yeshua speaking with chutzpah to Kadosh Baruch Hu? Is it the episode that we just recounted, throwing the cherem down in front of Hashem? I'm Rav Nachman b'avachavtan lifnei Hamakom atu Pinchas lo avid hachi. The Gemara says, "Look, it's not unprecedented." Pinchas did the exact same thing. After killing Zimri and Cosby, so what does he do? The Gemara goes on to describe. Vayamor Pinchas vayipalel vateatzer hamagifa. Va'amar evalaz v'yispalel lo nemar lo v'yipalel. It says the words vayipalel malam shamas aplilos imkono. So what Pinchas did is he's judging Hashem. We don't speak in that language normally, but that's what we're saying here. He takes the spear, which was attached to the dead bodies of Zimri and Cosby. He throws them down to Hashem, and he says, because of these two people, 24,000 Jews died. So this kind of language, this kind of speech to Hashem is not unprecedented. We have exactly this format regarding Pinchas. So you can't chastise Yoshua for speaking harshly against Hashem in defense of Jewish lives when Pinchas did the exact same thing. So maybe come from another pasuk where Yoshua says to Hashem, why did we cross the Yarden so that Jewish people should die? Moshe Nami Meimar Amar. So the Gemara says again, that's not unprecedented. We have that by Moshe. Lama Ariosa Lama Zeh. Moshe says, why did you do bad to these people? So Elamei Acha Veluho Alna Veneshe Be'Ever Hayarden. So the Gemara quotes now another pasuk, which the Gemara now concedes. This is where Yeshua went too far in terms of his chutzpah speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, you know what? Maybe we should go back over the Yarden. I'm going to turn the car around right now. We're going back. I'm not claiming I ever said that, but I'm not claiming I didn't ever say that. Okay, we're turning the car around. So that and that the Gemara says that was too far. Hashem says to Yeshua, get up. The Gemara now here is going to explain what Yeshua did that was incorrect, that was wrong, and why he himself received rebuke from Hashem. So the Gemara here points to this idea as follows, that we were instructed that when we cross the Yarden, so we're supposed to build a monument, 12 stones, writing the Torah on the 12 stones. The problem, says the Gemara, is that when Yehoshua crossed the Yarden, he did not set up the stones immediately, but rather he waited until they went interior into Eretz Yisrael, 60 mil, approximately 60 kilometers, and they got to Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and then and only then did he set up the stones. This was reported by Rabbi Shila. Now, Tosfos over here, the first heading Tosfos on this Amud, V'atem Richaktem, Tosfos deals with the problem that if the instructions were to set up the stones on Har Gerizim and on Har Eval, and if the geographic location of Har Gerizim and Har Eval are 60 mil interior to Eretz Yisrael, so how can Yeshua be chastised on the action? How could he be reprimanded? So see Tosfos, who discusses this very issue. Okay, back to the Gemara. Basa Danafak Okim Rav Amora Ale. So now, Rabbi Shila left, and he's explaining this was a rebuke that was given to Yeshua, and afterwards Rav basically corrected the statement. V'darash Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe Avdu. I'm sorry. Let me do that again. Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe Avdu. Kein Tziva Moshe as Yeshua v'chein asa Yeshua lo heisi davrim mikol Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe. The Navi reports that Yeshua did everything compliantly. Yeshua followed every mitzvah. Good. Well. So, im keimata malomer kum lach. So then, how do we understand the reprimand and the rebuke that was given to Yehoshua? Amalei atagaram to lehem. So Hashem says to Yehoshua, you know this achan business, a little bit your fault. Haynu dekamalei ba'ai. And this is what was said to Yehoshua in the city of Ai. V'asita la'ai l'malka, kasher asita l'iricho l'malka. He did to Ai and to his king that which he did to Yericho and his king. Meaning that what Yehoshua did that was inappropriate is that he made the cherem. The cherem was not something that had to have been done. Yehoshua did this as a way of like an extra chumrah for the Jewish people. And the Jewish people were not ready for such a chumrah. They were not ready to abstain from taking any of the spoils of war. So the Gemara says that what Yehoshua deserved in terms of a rebuke in this entire matter is that basically he made a chumrah for the Jewish people that they could not handle. The Gemara now over here reports the following episode. This is in the fifth parak of Yehoshua. This should sound familiar. This entire episode is verbatim the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Gimel. Yehoshua raises his eyes in Yericho and he sees. And a malch appears to Yehoshua and he says, I am coming now. And Yehoshua bows down to the Malach of Hashem. And the Gemara says, but don't we have a general rule that if you see somebody at night and you don't know the identity of that person, you should not say hello to that person because that person may be some sort of demonic force. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the Malach identified himself as being a Malach Hashem. V'dilma Meshakri, the obvious question, how do I know he's telling the truth? Gimir de la Mapik Shmei Shemayim Levatala. Gemara says, we have a tradition that a person does not say Hashem's name in vain. So he is a Malach Hashem. Amar Le. And now the Malach says to Yehoshua. This is now, we're on the top of Memdal Amid Beis. Emesh B'taltim Tamishol Ben Arabayim V'achshu B'taltim Tamatorah. because of the siege that you waged against Yericho. So yesterday you did not bring the Tamashal Ben Arbaim, and last night you were Mevatel Tamat Torah. You did not engage in the study of Torah, and you know in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, that is the pasuk of Yihisa Bo Yomam V'Layla, that Yehoshua was instructed to delve into the Torah both day and night. So Al Eza Me'embata. And now Yehoshua says to the Malach, this dialogue is not in the Navi itself. This is the Gemara providing the dialogue. And which of those offenses is worse? Amalei Atabati, he says, now, I'm coming now. Meaning for the Bitul Tamat Torah that you did over the course of the evening, that is unforgivable. So Miyad V'yalan Yehoshua B'laylahu B'socha Emek. Now it says, now the truth of the matter is, the Gemara says immediately, although the pasuk that's being quoted is three prakim later. But still, the Gemara understands that pasuk is a response to this dialogue, and he went in the Emek in the valley. Yehoshua immediately got involved in learning Torah and Halacha. And the Gemara says, and in terms of a hierarchy, we see clearly over here that we're supposed to put Talmud Torah above the offering of the Karban Tamid. Because the Malach said that of the two Averas that I'm coming, it's really the neglect of learning Torah which prompted my arrival. The Gemara now quotes another pasuk from Mishlei. Okay. We should end up, after this parak is over, we should do like a review of how many psukim in Mishlei is being quoted in this parak. So don't fly off the handle. Meaning, if you're going to fight with somebody, so don't just react. It may end up embarrassing. If you're going to fight with somebody, don't get other people involved. Keep it between you and the person that you're fighting with, but don't involve other people. And now the Gemara is going to explain that this pasuk of Mishlei, this is how they darshan in Eretz Yisrael. Hashem says to the Navi Yechezkel, I want you to tell the Jewish people that your father was an Amorite and your mother was a Chiti. Okay, these are Canaanite nations. This is an unflattering way to describe the Jewish people. And furthermore, okay, if you can imagine, what Hashem was actually making reference to was Avram and Sarah. Now, I admit, this Gemara is difficult to hear. It's difficult for me to say over. But it's difficult to hear in that Hashem is now, in its chastising of the Jewish people, is involving Avram and Sarah and referring to them in names which are really unflattering. And Hashem himself is going to be correct in the way he speaks. All this is a lot to try to digest. Okay, I'm admitting it. Amaruch paskanis lefnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So literally the wind says to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, but Rashi explains it's a malach, and Rashi actually identifies it's Gavriel, says to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, im yavo Avram v'Sarah v'yamdu lefanecha, atar amar lahem u'machlim osam. Now, if Avram and Sarah were here right now, would you talk that way and embarrass them in that manner? Rivcha rivez reyecha v'sodach yar tagel. And the Malach quotes the pasuk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't get other people involved in the fight. Meaning, you're upset with the Jewish people, fine, but don't involve Avram and Sarah. Umi Yisrael Rishus Kulahai. Now, does Gavriel have that kind of permission to speak that way to Hashem? And the Gemara says yes. In Am Rav Yosef Rabbi Chanina Shal Hashem Osiyesh Lo. Gavriel goes by three AKAs. Piskin, Itmon, Sigron. And the Gemara goes on to explain why was he given these names. Piskin Sheposik Dvarim Kapei Mala. So he is able to speak. He actually has the authorization to speak that way to Hashem. Itmon Sheotem Avonasem Shal Yisrael. He covers up the sins of the Jewish people. And Sigron Kevin Shesogar Shoveni Poseach. And once Gavriel closes arguments and has no other way to defend the Jewish people, no other Malach is going to step forward and say, oh, I'm going to defend the Jewish people. Meaning he is the end of the discussion. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Iyov. Hayaruch shuach lo batzar. If you set up your tefillah before the tzaros actually come. Amar Belazar lo lam yaktim adam tefillah tzara. What a person should do is he should daven not reactionary, but proactively, before the tzaros come. Now, I know, by the way, that part of the challenge is if we're going to daven before the tzaros come, we'd have to then know the tzaros are coming. And we don't have that kind of prophetic ability. Okay, but Imala Hiktam Avram Tfilah Tsara Bain, Baisel Bainai, Lonishtayar Mishi Sarita Palit. Avraham, years before the episode of Ai, as Avram is passing through the city of Ai, so through Nevuah, he now is able to foretell the tragedies that are going to occur in Ai, and Avraham davens in anticipation of this. Now, this is obviously hundreds of years before the episode, but Avraham davens for the Jewish people, and the Gemara reports that if Avraham would not have davened, we would have all been destroyed. Reish Lakish Amar Kol Amam Itzatzma B'Tfila Malamati and Lotzar Malamala. Reish Lakish gives a slightly different pshat in the pasuk that we just quoted from Eov, and that is that if we daven with kavana and fervor down here, we're not going to have any enemies up above, meaning nobody's going to be mekatrig, no one will accuse us from above. Rav Yochanan Amar, La'olam yivakesh adam rachim shiyu akol me'amtim es kochol, v'ayu lotzar milamala. What a person should be davening for is that he will be receiving, he'll be receiving help from above, and that he should have no persecutors from up above. Minayin shekiper lo viduya, finishing up the daf. So we're asking the question, how do I know that Achan, after the admission, it was in fact effective? Tanu Rabbanim Minayin shekiper lo viduya, shenemar v'yamar lo Yeshua ma'achar, tani yarkacha Hashem ha'yamazeh, ha'yamazeh ata'achor v'yata'achor lo'olam haba. Now I know we already quoted this before, but the Gemara quotes the Drasha again. Today you're dirty, but from this point going forward, you're not. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Divrei Hayamim. Now the pasuk here describes five sons. Zimri, as we're going to see, was another name for Achan. My kulam chamisha, kulam chamisha hin l'olam haba. They're all going to receive a portion of the world to come. Ksiv Zimri v'ksiv Achan. Now he goes by two names. Which is the proper name, and which one is more of an adjective? Rav Shmuel. So you see this all the time throughout the Gemara, where Rav and Shmuel debate which one's the proper name, which one's the adjective. He behaved like Zimri did. Just like Zimri had a illicit sexual relations with Cosby, so Achan did similar. We already described that earlier this morning when the Navi described him doing an Avalah. He rolled the sins of the Jewish people. Rashi says the word Achan from the word Achna, which in Aramaic means the snake. So just like the snake coils himself up, Achan also, through his actions, so sin rolled onto the Jewish people. The Gemara says, what's so bad? A person was framed, and he didn't do the Avera. And now he would like to vindicate his own name. Is that so bad? So the Gemara says, yes, it is. Because in your attempt to vindicate your own name, you are disparagingly speaking about the base and the witnesses. So it's not just simply you're vindicating your own name at the expense of other people. The Gemara says that's inappropriate. A person was being taken out to kill. And he feels that he did not do the sin. And he feels so strongly that he did not do the sin. So he says that my death should serve as a kapara for me. I'm sorry. If I did the crime, he says that my death should not serve as a kapara for anything I did. It's a very strong way to basically communicate to everybody, I didn't do it. And if I didn't do the crime, so then my death should actually serve as a kapara. And the witnesses should never be forgiven. Now the Chachamim, when they heard this, they said, look, on one hand, he obviously feels very strongly that he didn't do the crime. But what are we supposed to do? Meaning, we went through the whole judicial process. We did everything correctly. Now, if the witnesses in fact lied, so they're going to have to suffer the brunt of lying under oath. So, Pshita Kol Kaminei. Now, the Gemara says, now, when all said and done, what else was the conclusion? Meaning, if witnesses came forward, and even if they lied, and no one reported that they lied, what else is going to be the conclusion? Gemara says, L'tzricha dekahadre bu sahadeh. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why the Chachamim even thought about overturning the ruling. Because after the witnesses submitted their testimony, what the witnesses then said was, we lied. The witnesses actually themselves admitted that they lied in court. However, we have the rule, but you know that once you submit testimony, you cannot recant testimony. And so therefore, the Gemara, again, back to square one. So why would I have thought otherwise? The Gemara goes on to say that these witnesses not only wanted to recant their own testimony, but on top of that, they actually gave a plausible explanation of why they lied under oath, and the Gemara says, and still, it's not going to change. Meaning, once Beis Din goes through the process, and even though the witnesses want to recant testimony, and even though the witnesses themselves are explaining why they lied under oath, but the process is a process, and the system is the system, and that's it, and it's all done. And then the Gemara says, parenthetically, Ki Ahu Maisa Dabai Michseh, and the Gemara says, and this is similar to the story of the tax collector. No. This is a judicial process. It's part of the justice system. Even if it doesn't matter. Now, I do have a couple minutes remaining. What I'd like to do with the time remaining is I'd like to go through a Rashi. Now, on this page, you'll notice there's no Tosfos. Rashi covers both sides of the Amud, and Rashi over here tells a story. It's a story that is worth telling, that is worth hearing. Okay, in a short couple of minutes, I'm going to go through the story quickly. I understand it's a really long Rashi. The story is illuminating on so many good points. Let's begin. Rashi over here is telling the story. This story actually is coming from a Gemara Yerushalmi. It's in Chagiga. I did not look up the Yerushalmi inside, the full disclosure. But it's been reported to me that the story in Chagiga is somewhat, in the Yerushalmi, is somewhat different than the way Rashi here is reporting it. Some subtle differences. I guess it'd be all worthwhile for all of us, myself included, to look up the Yerushalmi inside. But anyway, I'm telling the story over as Rashi tells it. The story basically starts off with two people dying on the same day, a Adam Gadol, a great man, and a tax collector who was a Rasha. And now they're both being buried on the very same day, so it's two funerals in the same town on the same day. Now what happened was is that enemies came out on that very day. Everyone had to run and flee, leaving the coffins out in the street. One student stayed by his Rebbe's coffin, but everyone else left. And when they all came back to the coffin, so the coffins got switched. And despite the fact that there was one student who clearly knew that there was a switch that occurred, but they switched it anyway. Now, despite the protest of the student, the tax collector received a very dignified burial. All the people, you know, were eulogizing, you know, this coffin, thinking that it was the Adam Gadol, thinking it was the Talmid Chacham. And meanwhile, the Talmid Chacham got buried with just the family of the tax collector, and that was it. And for the student who knew the truth, it bothered him. The whole event bothered him. And he wanted to understand the divine providence over here. And that night when he went to bed, he had a dream, and his Rebbe appeared to him in the dream and said, "Do not worry, I'm in Gan Eden, and the Rasha is in Gehenim, and you need not worry." Right? In other words, it worked out. But there was one occasion, says the Rebbe in the dream to his student, where I heard a Talmid Chacham being disparaged, and I did not come to the defense of the Talmid Chacham, and for that I was punished, and I received this indignity at my burial. And one time the tax collector, who was a Rasha, who was a miser, and it was just not a good person, but one time he prepared a festive meal for the official. The official never showed up, and so he gave the food to the poor. So, not with any kind of intent and not with any kavana, but he ended up giving, he gave tzedakah one time. And so therefore he received the dignity of a proper burial. Up until what point in time is that person going to be in Gehenna? And he says, well, they're just waiting downstairs in Gehenna for the death of Shimon Meshetach. And Shimon Meshetach will take the place of this of the tax collector. Now, please understand, with proper reaction to this story, Shimon Meshetach is one of the Zugos. He's the Baal HaMasora. And can you imagine that the Rebbe's telling his student in the dream that Shimon Meshech is going to take the place of him in Gehenna? Amar lo, it's the story is amazing. Amar lo mimnei noshem achshefan yos Yisrael sheyesh ba'ashkelon ve'in osa behem din. There are witches in Ashkelon, and Shimon Meshech knows about it, and he's not doing anything about it. And for that, he's going to get punished. L'machar sipar oso tamad dvarim l'shimon Meshech. The student next day goes to Shimon Meshech and reports his dream to Shimon Meshech. Ma asa. Shimon Meshech now knows that he's basically been charged to deal with the witches in Ashkelon. So Shmonim Bachurim Baalei Koma Havayoso Ayom Yom Gishom Menasin Kai Gadol Biad Kol Echav Echav V'Kipol Talos Besocham V'Amalem Yizaru Bahem Shein Shmonim Shmonim. So he takes 80 young men, tall men, has them putting coats in a jug, goes and is now going to confront the witches in Ashkelon. Oveshashi Tikansu Yagbi Ish Achas Mehem In Arutz V'Shuv In Machshefa Sholetes Bachem. What we're going to do is we're going to go into the den of the witches. Each one of you men are going to take one of the witches, lift her off the ground, and by doing so, rendering her powerless. If I understood how witchcraft worked, I'd understand this. But anyway, so first Shimon Meshech enters into the palace of the witches. They ask him, "Who are you?" Shimon Meshech says, "I am this great sorcerer." So they said, "What's your sorcery power?" It's pouring rain outside, and I'm going to bring in 80 young men who are going to be bone dry despite the fact that we walked in the rain. So he goes outside and he gives the boys the sign. Now they took the coats that were in the jug, and they were obviously protected from the rain. And they come in and they're bone dry. And so basically, like all magic, you know it's not real. Okay, I know that's me talking. So you know it's not real. But he tricked them. He tricked the witches. And so now, the boys were able to pick the witches up off the ground, render them powerless. And that is how Shimon Meshech dealt with the 80 witches. Two relatives of the witches now conspire and testify falsely against the son of Shimon Meshech. And the lines that we just learned in the Gemara were actually spoken by the son of Shimon Meshech, who was taken out to be killed, despite the fact that he didn't do it. And the witnesses now actually attempted to recant their testimony. And Shimon Meshech basically said, it's too late. You submitted your testimony. You cannot recant your testimony. And even though you're providing a very plausible explanation of why you lied, it's simply too late. I would like to add to this, as we end the shiur today, that if you look in Pirkei Avos, Shimon Meshech is quoted as saying, he's one of the Zugos. He's quoted as saying, have a Masunim Bedin, that when you do litigation, you got to be extraordinarily careful and meticulous and slow when you litigate. And don't be fast. And I think it's a simple connection to connect the story that we just learned regarding the son of the Shimon Meshech and that which he says in Pirkei Avos.